And a good afternoon to you, Portland. Thank you for bringing Rose City Forum and KKPZ into your listening space this fall day. I can't wait to introduce you to our guest. You're going to love her. I just know it. Her name is Erica Morrison, and she's a writer and a speaker, a visionary, and she calls herself a life artist. She has an unconventional and poetic approach to spirituality. She paints bold prophetic portraits of kingdom come. Doesn't that sound beautiful? There is no way I could come up with words like that to describe anything. But Erica makes her home and invests her heart in the Yale University town of New Haven, Connecticut, along with her husband, Austin, and their three sons, Gabe, Seth, and Jude, and a female pit bull named Zeppelin. How cute is that? She blogs at ericamorrison.com. I will put her blog up on our Rose City Forum Facebook page so you can find that. And today we're going to be talking about her book that releases today. It's called Bandersnatch, An Invitation to Explore Your Unconventional Soul. Like I said, it comes out today. And in that book, she addresses her belief that Christian tradition is suffering from an epidemic of sameness and encourages her readers to embrace the unique their unique nature as a gift from God. Thanks for being with us today, Erica.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
I am very excited, and I'm very excited to talk about your book. I have to say, just open with this, Your book was sent to me, and I saw the cover art. My husband and I have a joke. I like to read all the books that I'm interviewing the guests of or the authors of. I love that. And sometimes I don't get a chance to read the book. So my husband and I have a joke that when I don't get a chance to read the book, I'm always worried about what am I going to talk about? And he can always say, well, your cover is really great. You have a really great cover. And it's like this joke. But the sad part is with your book that I really did read all the way through, I love your cover.
Isn't it beautiful?
Yes.
That's a cover. This was one of my fears going into publishing, is that I wouldn't be able to have a contribution or a say in the cover design, because I knew that if I didn't have a cover that I liked, I would not promote my own book. Because, like, the art is so important to me. So I was like, awesome cover, I would buy that book. Not awesome cover. I totally judge books by their cover. I shouldn't, but I do.
We shouldn't. I know, but I don't really care about covers. That's why it's so funny that I'm like, okay, I really did read this book, and I really did love this book. But the cover is so incredible. And so our readers will see that as I post the link to buy your book. But where did that, I mean, seriously, did you design that cover?
So there is a bit of a story there, because I was sent 4 mock-up covers from my publishing company.
Okay.
And it wasn't that they were bad, because I think they could have made very good arguments for each of the covers, but I didn't feel like they sort of captured the common thread that I felt I tried to weave throughout the whole book. Okay. So it didn't, the covers didn't speak the language of the insides, and I wanted the book to be holistic from front to back. And so instead of saying to my publishing company, well, this is, you know, I'm thinking more along these lines, or I'd rather see something like this, I went to a good friend of mine, who is actually the graphic designer for an organization called Love 146.
Hmm.
I don't know if you've heard of them, but they're based out of... Yeah, have you heard of them? Sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
Oh, yeah, I think, I mean, it sounds very familiar, so I'm sure I ran across them somehow.
Well, they're an abolitionist organization, and they're based out of New Haven, Connecticut. But my friend is a graphic designer there, and I said, hey, I need your help. And so we sat down together, and literally within 15 minutes, we had this cover. 15 minutes. Because I knew what I wanted, and she just took it, and she made it creatively awesome in just that amount of time.
It's beautiful, and it is a piece of art. And I, hopefully our listeners have looked on our Rose City Forum Facebook page in the past couple of weeks. Erica was actually able with a previous guest, Micah Murray, if you remember Micah, was able to design a t-shirt with this cover art on it. And I am in love with it. So hopefully in the past few weeks, you've seen me promoting this t-shirt that Erica is donating the proceeds to the Syrian refugees. So that's amazing, Erica, that you're able to do that. And it's a great shirt. And it has the title on it, Bandersnatch. Now, if I'm going to wear a shirt that says Bandersnatch on it with beautiful artwork, people are going to have questions for sure. So let's talk about your title, Bandersnatch. What is that from?
Okay. I don't know if you are familiar with Lewis Carroll's children's novels. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that you are a little bit. Alice in Wonderland is quite popular. And Through the Looking Glass was the first, I believe the first children's book that he wrote where the Bandersnatch was introduced. And it's funny, I'm going to make a little bit of a confession here, because I was familiar with Lewis Carroll's books, you know, since I was a child, but I didn't remember that the Bandersnatch was actually in his books. I didn't remember the character from that. So
not at all.
It's such an obscure figure. So it's not something that I didn't make the connection. So when I was racking my brain for a title to this book, I was coming up empty for months on end. And it was the day that I had to send in my proposal that I was sitting on the couch and I was trying to just be as quiet and reflective as possible, because I was like, if I'm quiet enough, maybe I'll hear something.
It'll come.
And so Bandersnatch just fell out of the sky. And I was like, I didn't even know what it was. I did not know what a Bandersnatch was, but I was like, oh, I love the way that sounds. I want that for the title of my book, you know? But I was like, I better look it up to see if it would even relate to the material inside the book. And so I did some, you know, Google searching, and I found out that indeed it did fit the theme of the book. And so a Bandersnatch, while more commonly known as that wild and mythical creature in Lewis Carroll's children's novels, is also a person with unconventional habits and attitudes. Mm. And so I felt like I was soaring after that word fell out of the sky, and after I started exploring the definition, because it's exactly what the book is about.
Well, and completely. And the subtitle to your book, An Invitation to Explore Your Unconventional Soul. So for our listeners right now who really have no idea what this book is about, how would you describe it to them?
Well, a couple of years ago, I started to imagine living in a world where people were more defined by who they are and less defined by what they do. Usually the thing that we lead with in life is, or if you're at a party and somebody walks up to you, it's a stranger, and he says, so what do you do? Mm-hmm. People lead with a doing question. And I feel like it's fundamentally flawed. But we're so used to it that we don't even notice that. And the reason I started noticing it is that when I got asked that question, I would have this interior reaction while keeping a smile on my face and trying not to be awkward when I was answering it, because I felt awkward inside. So usually that comes out in my responses. I was, you know, I would try not to be awkward on the outside, but on the inside, I felt wrong. And I was like, why do I feel wrong when people ask me this question? You know, it's a very common question. I shouldn't be reacting the way that I do. But as I started to examine it, I started to realize that I wanted to be defined by who I was more than by what I do, you know? And at the time I really struggled because I didn't do a lot. And so I didn't want to say, well, I'm just a mom, or I'm just home with, you know, I felt like I wasn't enough of a contributor based on what I was doing, because that was that's a whole nother conversation. But, I'm so much more than what I'm doing. You know, that was the internal response. It's like, I'm more than this. And I want you to know me more than my job, or more than what I'm doing right now. Does that make sense?
It makes complete sense. So much so that this was even before I got this radio job. It's funny, right before that, I also have a blog. And so I blogged a whole little tiny series on that very same question and how insecure I felt because of the question. And maybe that's why I resonate so well with this book, Bandersnatch. So now when people come to you and say, "So, Erica, how are you? What do you do?" What do you say?
Well, because it depends on the situation. I try to gauge the person that I'm with, because you can create a very awkward situation if you lead, if it's somebody I feel like has a common, you know, common spirituality or a common theology,
views. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, common views, then I feel more open to say, well, I am this, mm-hmm. rather than I do this.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're just going to create a situation where people are looking at you cross-eyed, you just kind of, you go with the common denominator, right? You go with what is understood. So it's both, but when I give the response that people are looking for, at least inside me, I've done the inner work that helps me understand myself, so I don't feel quite as out to sea as I used to.
Well, I like that, and I think that reading Bandersnatch is a good insight to how that journey worked for you as well. So much of the book, like I said, resonated with me. So much I just read and thought to myself, wow, this is what I always say I'd want to do. Some of the things you do in life, and we'll get to that later on in the show.
Yeah.
But I'm like, this is what I want. But in reality, I don't let myself. I'm almost like a little bit too scared. Erica explains a lot in her book about how she really does live like Jesus sometimes in ways that I am too scared to do. And it's embarrassing to admit that, but I will. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in our conversation. If you have any questions for Erica during this interview, go ahead and list those on our Rose City Forum Facebook page. I'll make sure that Erica sees these. And don't forget to pick up her book today, Bandersnatch, An Invitation to Explore Your Unconventional Soul. I'll talk to Erica a little bit more about the insides of the book and also what it means that she calls herself a life artist. We'll go ahead and continue this conversation right here on the Rose City Forum. And I'm talking today with Erica Morrison. She's a writer and a speaker. She also calls herself a life artist. She wrote the book Bandersnatch, An Invitation to Explore Your Unconventional Soul. It is being released today. And I'm talking with Erica a little bit about what the book is about. But also, I'm curious, Erica, your blog, and you list yourself, well, your blog is at ericamorrison.com. And listeners, we'll go ahead and put that on the Rose City Forum Facebook page. But you call yourself a life artist. What is a life artist?
Yeah. Well, I believe that my peculiar contribution, I shouldn't say peculiar because I don't think it's just unique to me, but I feel like my mission is to create a fine art out of living. And so the mediums that I use might look a little different than other people's, or I just take the common, ordinary things that I see in life and I create a lifestyle of art out of them. And that doesn't mean they're always pretty. Doesn't mean that that everything's rosy all the time or that we don't get in fights in our family. It just means that I investigate the whole experience. And I create art from the whole experience. So whether it's suffering or if it's an adventure or whether it's joy or whether it's like mud on the floor, my intent and my purpose is to create that living experience into fine art.
I think you have to have a certain personality for that. When you said mud on the floor just now, I got a little bit of anxiety in my gut. Like that kind of, I mean, you were just talking and you said mud on the floor and all of a sudden I felt that.
I don't like mud on the floor either.
But you seem like the kind
but
of person.
It's sort of a metaphor for like the messiness of life. Like I don't push against it. I try to invite it. And, you know, get my fingers into it and pull it apart and make it a part of that artistic experience.
That sounds scary to me. What is it about you that embraces that or doesn't show a side of fear when doing that?
I don't know that it's not without fear, because I think fear is part of it too. Fear is a part of the human experience. And if I'm, you know, a life artist, then I am reminding myself constantly to open myself up to the things that don't feel good, you know, to fear, to suffering, to pain, to all of it, you know? But what is it in me that I guess I was just knit together with this desire to feel everything, because I feel like by it's that experience, I understand the diversity of God better. And so to me, that's the fullness of an artistic experience. It's like the more that I investigate, the more that I get on my knees, the more that I'm picking through the mud or leaning into suffering or experiencing joy or adventuring with different people and exploring cultures. And, you know, we live in a very diverse neighborhood with lots of different cultural backgrounds, you know, blending together. And I just like, I see God more with the more that I dig into the fullness of it, you know? So I guess that's in me. It's like my heart longs to know who God is. And I feel like he's revealed himself through those mediums, people, mud, trees, wind, you know, cultures, opinions, like all of it. I take it in. I have a very porous nature, I guess.
Does that answer your question?
It
answers it a lot. And I'm wondering, as you speak, it's something, well, I can say, you know, it's something that I desire, that I want, but no way I've let my fear, I've let my anti-vulnerability, if you will, keep me away from that.
Yeah.
I'd love for you to describe the neighborhood, actually, that you and your family live in, specifically because it's a neighborhood that I always think, if I could do life again, would I do what Erica and her family did? When we moved to our house now, we looked at schools, we looked at property values, we looked at these things that really don't make an eternal kingdom difference. And we got caught in that. We were just caught in that. Never did I feel we were doing anything wrong.
But it's what you do, right?
Well,
it's what you do.
Get caught in it. And so I think that if you stop and think, if you really stop and think, like, you know, then I'm like, well, would I have chosen this neighborhood, or would I have chosen maybe North Portland or inner city Portland and put my kids in some of those public schools? So I'm wondering if you can explain to our audience kind of the neighborhood you live in and how you live your everyday life.
Yeah. So we kind of fell into this neighborhood by accident. Let me start there. We moved to New Haven about 16 years ago. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. It's been a long time. And we started adding babies to our family faster than we could afford the rent we were paying in the nice neighborhood.
Got it.
And so, you know, by the time we had 3 babies in 3 years, we outgrew the small apartment that we had in the nicer place. So, us and a bunch of our friends started to move into this neighborhood, just on the outskirts of New Haven. I mean, still very much, you know, in the city, but it's in an area that's not quite as nice on the surface.
Yeah.
Or at least I shouldn't say that, because I mean, it all depends on how you define nice, right?
Well,
I've learned from this neighborhood has pushed me into shifting my definitions all over the place. And so what I view as nice now is not the same as it was 15 years ago, but we're pushed into this place that was very, at the time, very messy to me, very loud, very congested, and very diverse. Where there's a lot of people that weren't like me. And I feel like if there was any intention around that besides being able to afford where we were living, if there was any cosmic intention, it was so that I could grow up. Because I was 23 years old, but I was a baby in my understanding of the kingdom. And I feel like I grew up on the skin of all the people around me and all of their nuances and all of their oddities that I had never formally been introduced to at that kind of face-to-face level. So the neighborhood's gritty. there's like, you know, there was a crack house across the street from us for a long time. We have drag races, especially around the holidays. Around the 4th of July, we wake up in the morning and the cars are covered in firework ash and it looks like it's a bombed out city, you know, because they do not go quietly into the night, you know, and like there are like, you know, motorcycles that, you know, gangs of motorcycles or dirt bikes, I should say, that just go around and around and around and around and you're just like screaming on the inside and you want to like go out and like get a BB gun and they're like pop their tires. They're like, we have, like, let me just say this. We have our moments where like, if I could just put a tripwire, you know, out in the street, it would be awesome. But no, that aside, and we have a pot dealer who lives next door to us. And it's just like our kids knew all the cuss words before they were three. Because the music that rattles your windows at times is just not, it's just not nice. It's not Christian music. Let's just put it that way. But that was an opportunity. That became an opportunity not just for us to grow as adults, but it's an opportunity to build a support system inside our kids that allowed them to see the world in a different way and to see people and humanity and to be inclusive and embrace like people and have compassion. And I love that about our little humans. They're becoming anthropologists in the way that we've invited them to see where people have come from and to imagine story in a way that I don't feel like I understood it growing up on a 40-acre farm, pretty secluded from the world, you know. There's pros and cons to living in the country and in the city, but I think it's important that we always live in reference to each other. So wherever you feel planted, you live in reference to people who don't live like you. You live in reference. So if you live in the suburbs, then you, I feel, are called to live in reference to the people who are in the inner city or the people in the country, because we all ingest different experiences and see different things of who God is, and together like a whole picture, right? Yeah. So anyway, we chose the city. Like once we moved to Fairhaven, and we realized what was happening to us. And by happening, I mean we were on a threshing floor, and it felt like things were getting beat out of us and beat into us. And I say that in the most loving way, because I don't know if I'm a martyr, but I like to change. I like to transform, and I love when God is messing with me. And so that was a process, and that's obviously not over, because we still want to tripwire people when they're drag racing around me. I mean, I don't think it's bad to have that. I mean, you know, we all have our moments. But a politician came by our house the other day and was like, "What would you change about the neighborhood?" I was like, "You know what? There's a lot of things that could be supported in this neighborhood, but do not clean it up. Do not make it tidy and pretty and all of those other things, because that would devastate me." Wow. It would devastate me. So, yeah.
That's what I mean. I do love that in your book, and you share lots of stories. And when we continue our conversation, hopefully we can get into some of those stories. And like I said, it's pretty impressive. It's pretty impressive that you mentioned in your book that you grew up on a farm in northern Michigan. And northern Michigan is pretty darn remote. So to do that, to go to the, I mean, would you call it the inner city where you are right now? What would you call it?
Yeah, I mean, we're right in the city. We're in a very urban
environment.
Very urban environment. Yep.
Yeah. So, let's talk about that a little bit more and how that relates to your book. You also talk in your book about your mother, and I am dying to find out more about her. So, some of these things we'll talk about in just a few moments when we continue our conversation here on the Rose City Forum. And I'm talking with Erica Morrison, continuing the conversation. She wrote the book Bandersnatch, An Invitation to Explore Your Unconventional Soul. That book is being released today. A beautiful book about really how she is living the life that Jesus asks us to live, that the life that so many of us, I think, are scared to live, especially those of us in the suburbs. We have our very safe neighborhoods and our safe schools. And I know it's something we look for when we're buying a home or getting our family settled. But sometimes I wonder if we made the right decision, because the people we're influencing aren't really the same people that Erica's family is influencing, nor are my kids growing up in a life that Erica's kids are growing up in. And I am a little bit jealous, I'll say. I'm a little bit envious. I think that with my kids, when I try to show them that not everyone lives like us, or show them that, yes, we do need to help in a soup kitchen, we travel to get there. So we get in the car, we drive to downtown Portland, we'll, you know, help the homeless out there. But Erica and her family live in the midst of crack houses and homeless residents, and they're in the middle of it. They're in the middle of it. And one of the stories you tell, well, you meet a ton of people, and we get to meet them too in your book, but a few times you mention how your mother is with you, and you don't even mention it like it's like, okay, and in this instance, my mother with us. It's always just kind of like she's there, right? So does she...
She's like God.
I know. But
she shows up.
She does in the book. She just shows up. Does she still live in Michigan where you grew up, or does she live out by you?
They did live here by us for a time, but now she's in Florida. Her and my dad and my youngest sibling are in Florida.
They're in Florida. But
But they were in New Haven.
Okay. So they were there. But because some of the people that you meet, you just invite, if you might see a homeless man and you'll just invite him to have frozen yogurt with you, or you will see a strung out woman and invite her to go see a movie with you. And your mom is part of that in the book. And I'm wondering, did you grow up with parents who were this hospitable to all walks of life, or did you come by that naturally? Or is that something that your mom and even dad later learned later in life? How did that come about?
I think that my mom was born. Let me say this, and I mean it as a compliment. My mom is one of the strangest people I know. and when I say strange, I mean, she's not a regular person. When you imagine what regular, however you define regular, my mom is not that person, because she does things that I'm afraid to do.
Wow.
And she does things that most people won't do because there's fear or discomfort or persuaders or assumptions that keep a person from going to the places that she willingly goes every day. My mom relates better and is more herself in the context of the like homeless community wherever she lives. I mean, she will live somewhere for 5 minutes, and she will know everybody that doesn't sleep in a bed.
Wow.
She'll know everybody. I know that's hyperbole, but it's near the truth. I remember this story that she always told us when we were kids, and how for a while she was a popular girl in her school. She went to a Christian school, Christian private school, when she was growing up. And she was a popular girl for a while until she befriended somebody who was disabled. Oh. And one of the other popular girls came up to my mom and says, "If you're her friend, you can't be our friend." And my mom was like, "Well, I guess I'm not your friend then."
Wow.
You know, so I think my mom was, there was something built into her that a lot of people have to work for. You know, we all have that spark. There's something unique to each of us that we contribute. And then, you know, if we are around that person who has that particular unique spark that we don't have, you know, you sort of are enriched by that person, and you think, you know what, I'm not quite like that, but I'm enriched by this, and I do see the value in it. I'm not trying to be my mom, you know, and you're not trying to be me, because that wouldn't work for the interlocking circle of contribution. Mm. But my mom gives us something that we need, and that she is a stranger in a strange land. And I say that because she relates better to people who are missing their teeth than she will ever at a party with a bunch of people that are like her. She just can't, like, it's just, she's one of the most adorably awkward people I know.
I think your mom needs to write a book, too. Well, have her write a book. She needs to write a book for her generation, I think.
She really does, because she's actually a brilliant writer, but she's just on a different path right now. Yeah. But I would say that when my mom started dragging us to the nursing home when we were little, and she started to beat this drum in our hearts about the kingdom. And you know, she'd use different language than I do. I don't even remember what language she used. I just remember what deposit it left with me. She would say that I'm the apple that fell closest to her tree. And I think that's true. There's a lot of similarities between us. So that thing that was in her it's also in me, although it's mine. You know what I mean?
I do. And it's so funny because when you said, like I said, you just kind of pop her in the stories every once in a while. You don't make a big deal out of it. The first time I read it, I actually had to go back and read it again. I'm like, did she just say her mother? Did she say her mother was doing this with her?
Yeah.
Wow.
My mom is irregular.
Well, she sounds amazing. And I see then how it came into you and now how it will come into your children. That will be fascinating to see how your boys grow up and what they'll end up doing in their own lives. So I love that. I just love it. Let's talk about your book and how you broke it up into different sections. You use four terms. One is avant-garde. Yeah. One is alchemy. Yeah. Anthropology and art. Do you want to share with our listeners a little bit about what each section covers and how you came up with the terms, things like that?
Yeah, I wish I could tell you. I think that I came up with the terms in a similar way that Bandersnatch fell into my brain. So this book started off as a speaking session at a conference a couple years ago. I was putting together the content for this session that I was going to be speaking at. I was terrified. It was the first time I was ever like speaking for an hour in front of people.
Awesome.
But, and I worked at, like, it's almost embarrassing to say how long I worked at putting together that material, but it was new to me. But that's an aside. It ended up turning into, it became the outline for this book.
Sure.
But, I don't know how much you want me to give away as far as the themes go, but the book opens up with the term avant-garde. And avant-garde is a word that people use to refer to a lifestyle or values that are informed by unorthodox and experimental methods, daring approaches to life, radical ways of pioneering ideas, art, thought. And generally, people who define themselves as like avant-garde movers and shakers and thinkers will push against the boundaries of what is accepted as normal or status quo.
Mm-hmm. And you're giving the real definition. And I think it's funny that and you mentioned this in your book as well, but when I saw avant-garde, the first thing I thought about was Project Runway because...
Isn't that funny?
And you actually...
That's exactly... Yeah.
The same thing. I'm like, that's all I know from the term avant-garde.
That's all of us know it from fashion. But it's actually a much more loaded definition because it goes a long way back into like political thinkers and people who, you know, literature, and people are always pushing that boundary of what's the status quo or what the culture has conformed to in that day. The avant-garde, you know, people are, I don't know, pushing it forward. Does that make sense?
Oh, it totally does. I just think it's funny. I love the actual definition. And then it's just funny that we all think fashion. So thanks to Project Runway.
Yes. Thank you. That's right. So, avant-garde is just sort of it's an invitation to think about yourself differently. And it doesn't mean that you have to be on the street corner being this loud and aggressive person who's like verbally pushing against what culture is conforming to in that day. It just is sort of, it's this intention towards life. It's this intention towards your day that you are not automatically, there's it's more of a response to life rather than a reaction. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, I think we're so used to reacting to what's going on around us, but I think avant-garde requires and asks that you slow down a little bit and respond and, you know, and think and reimagine and be yourself in the midst of conformity, because you can't get outside. None of us can get outside the welter of systems because we are all, my kids are in the institution. The church is an institution. We all subscribe to these institutions, but we're not, avant-garde asks you not to do it mindlessly, to not just.
And that, I can tell
it's,
that.
It's not just there because it's there. You know what I mean?
I think that to me, well, no, I can't say that. That's the only one. I was going to say that's the main theme I would give your book, but that's actually not true. It's just a section of your book, like you have it as a section of your book. So we're going to pause in conversation for a few moments, but when we return, I want to talk about the other three sections in your book, alchemy, anthropology, and art. And so we'll continue talking with Erica Morrison in just a few moments here on the Rose City Forum. And I'm back today talking with Erica Morrison and her beautiful book, Bandersnatch, An Invitation to Explore Your Unconventional Soul. It releases today, and you can find a link to her book on our Rose City Forum Facebook page, as well as a link to her blog if you'd like to read more about her. She blogs at ericamorrison.com. She calls herself a life artist, which I love, just beautiful. We're talking about the different sections in her book, though. Out of all of her chapters, she kind of breaks them up. We were talking about avant-garde just a few moments ago, but one of your sections, Erica, is called, and I never know if I say alchemy or alchemy. Which one is it?
Alchemy. It is. I think alchemy. You know, tomato, tomato.
I know.
But either way, it's fine.
So, what does this mean to you in your book?
All right. So, avant-garde. Let me just say that first, because it leads into alchemy. Avant-garde is the approach to life that I invite my readers to see their world through. So when you take avant-garde as your approach into alchemy, you are then being invited to, what's the word I'm looking for? So you're approaching the mediums a little bit differently if you have avant-garde as your lens. So let's start there. So alchemy... Sorry, what was the question you asked me about alchemy? Just what is it?
How do you define it as it relates to your book?
Yeah, so I define alchemy, and I guess it would be probably helpful to tell people that I redefine a lot of things, and I try not to do it willy nilly. Like, I don't mean to say, you know, like, alchemy has, you know, a strong historical foundation in the Middle Ages, right?
Sure.
So it was an actual experimentation and scientific process that went on for a long time, where people were trying to take these very base materials and turn them into something that was everlasting, whether it was like gold or the universal panacea. They wanted to get rich or die trying, or live forever.
Right.
not unlike what we do today.
Right. Boy,
similarly.
Times, the more they change, the more they stay the same.
That's right. But I think what really grabbed my attention was the sub-definition for alchemy. And that the sub-definition says that alchemy is any magical power or process of transmuting a common substance, usually of little value, into a substance of great value. And so what that means to me in the context of this book is reimagining the elements around you. So we're taking these substances that have no value on the surface. And I mean literally like air and dirt and the feet of my children and all these like things that happen all around me. And we're transmuting them. We're bringing them into a process of alchemy, where we're taking them and bringing them into sort of an eternal experience. Does that, I know I say, does that make sense a lot? I just want to make sure I'm communicating.
It does.
For then, people who have never read the book.
Exactly, exactly. And you do give, and I don't want to give the whole thing away, but there is a story in there about how you befriend a homeless man and buy him frozen yogurt and sit and eat with him. And it's a beautiful story. And it's one that I'm sure we'd like to think we would all do given the chance. But I'm, you know, I've not done it. Even in my experience working with the homeless, I've never invited one to come and sit with me. And so that was just beautiful. And I encourage the readers, well, I'm excited for them to read that particular story in your book. What about anthropology? How does that define in your book?
So anthropology is, you know, in its very base definition, is just the study of Homo sapiens.
Sure.
But like I said, in the first chapter of my book, I tell a story that explains why I redefine or, you know, stretch the definition for certain words. And I don't feel like I dishonor the words that I'm stretching and redefining. But anthropology, if alchemy is the stuff of heaven, if alchemy is what sits between water and wine and the mustard seed and the kingdom and five loaves, two fishes and 5,000 people, alchemy is what sits waiting in the wings of anthropology. Anthropology is the stuff of earth. And so those two mediums, so, you know, avant-garde is like you're approaching these mediums in a very unconventional, uncommon way. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you have the stuff of heaven and the stuff of earth. And the stories that I tell, I hope provoke a new landscape or lens by which people can see the world around them and then see God around them and then see themselves in the midst of all that. Because, you know, it's an invitation to explore your unconventional soul, and you can wonder, well, what does the stuff of heaven and the stuff of earth have to do with it? And my answer would be everything. You know, because in the midst of all of that, you are seeing yourself differently. You're seeing yourself through something very bandersnatchy, if I may.
Exactly.
So it's avant-garde is the approach, alchemy and anthropology, stuff of heaven, stuff of earth, and those mediums and that approach are then land you into the fourth section of the book, which is art. And art is one of those words that has been defined and redefined a million different ways by so many different thinkers and really bright people. And so I don't have the corner on that, but I think that what I have done is allow people to see the specifics and the shape and the size of their artistic contribution and invite them to see it in a way they might not have seen it before.
I love it.
So that's sort of the sum of the four.
It's how you've made art out of this. And anthropologists, I love, I don't know if you said this earlier on the show or when we were talking earlier, that you're raising your sons, you're raising your children to be anthropologists just by where you live. And like I said before too, I just can't wait to see how this affects them as they grow up. Your own mother's gift of hospitality has led that to you. And I am excited to see how that works in with your children as well. Well, one more thing quickly I wanted to, just talk about or say how much I appreciated, and I don't know if we can get into it too much. In one of the chapters in your book, you were talking about Adam and Eve and God as the parent. But you also, you gave the definition of God as a tailor. And this was when Adam and Eve did their sin.
Right, when he sewed them, sewed them clothes. Yeah.
Exactly, exactly. And so you put in there, Adam, this is the part of the Bible where Adam is embarrassed that he's naked. And God says, well, who told you were naked? And we think about that, you know, oh yeah, that's the story in Genesis we've heard a million times, but you kind of make it real to us now. Mm. Well, who told you weren't enough? Well, who told you were ugly? Well, who told you weren't smart? And taking that, but then you use the example of God as the tailor. Who told you weren't naked? Well, God came through and he sewed Adam clothes. You know what I mean? He yeah. used that discipline. But then he's like, okay, but here I am. Here I am mm-hmm. to kind of help you. And is that the kind of message you yeah. were trying to get at? That's what I took from it.
Well, you know, the thing about Bandersnatch, and I love hearing people's responses and what they get out of every story, because people bring their entire world mm-hmm. and their entire history that they carry around on their backs. They bring it to this book. And so I try not to be too prescriptive or formulaic while I'm delivering what I feel like is in my soul to give away, you know? And so I don't even know if that's exactly what I was like intending. Or giving. Right. But the fact that you got it just like is incredible.
Well, that's, know? I mean, it is funny. So I guess, well, then you were intending a different purpose then. But either way, that's what I got out. Yeah. I just love that. That one stuck with me.
Yeah. And that, you know what? It has stuck with a lot of people. That one particular section in chapter 3, I hear a lot of feedback on. And so, it really just blesses me just enormously to hear that kind of response.
Well, and you,
from people and from you too.
That's great. I was going to say you have blessed us. You blessed us here in Portland by giving us your time and sharing with us your heart a little bit. And I'm excited about your book, Bandersnatch, to see how our listeners respond to it. So listeners, if you do pick up this book, leave me a comment on the Rose City Forum Facebook page. I'd love to hear what you got out of Bandersnatch. I bet you'll find it as beautiful as I did. Eric, I thank you for sharing your beautiful soul on the radio today and with Portland. We are so lucky to have had you.
Thank you so much, Andy. I really appreciate it.
Well, we are very fortunate. So, Portland, as always, I hope you learned something today. I, as always, did. You can find all the information that we talked about on our Rose City Forum Facebook page. You can always find me there or on Twitter at Rose City Forum. If you want to get a message for Erica, you can do that as well, and I'll make sure she gets it. I hope you have a beautiful afternoon, and we will catch up here on the next Rose City Forum.